You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Babylon 5 ended a great war and united 100 alien races in peace. Danger didn't die. It just went underground with new heroes and new evils to carry the torch.
We need to make sure they all understand we will not be intimidated.
What is wrong with you people?
We have to set him against himself.
It's an entire new season of Babylon 5 with all new episodes.
And so it begins.
There is a hole in your mind.
What do you want?
No one here is exactly what he appears.
Nothing's the same anymore.
Commander Sinclair is being reassigned.
Why don't you eliminate the entire non-holo?
I was a great hand, reaching out of the star.
Who are you?
President Clark has signed a decree today declaring
martial
law.
These orders have forced us to declare independence.
Weapons and
supplies. People get off their encounter-suited butts and do something.
You are the one who watched.
To Zahadu, who will die.
Why are you here? Do you have anything worth living for?
Think of my beautiful city.
Giants in the playground.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy!
We are here to place President Clark under arrest.
Turn around. Very, very slowly.
Hello, Mr. Garibaldi. Good to see you again. I was wondering how you were doing. You haven't written, you haven't called.
Shut up.
Obviously haven't improved your manners.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic, Babylon 5.
This week, we review the Babylon 5 TV movie, The River of Souls.
I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And the synopsis. An archaeologist brings his most recent find to Babylon 5, an orb containing 1 billion souls, of an extinct race. When a soul hunter arrives to recover the souls, they escape and wreak havoc through the station, leaving Lockley, Zach, and Garibaldi to save the station. Now, this was originally broadcast on November the 8th, 1998, on TNT as one of two films shown over the 1998-1999 season to fill the gap between the fifth season of Babylon 5 and the spin-off series of Crusade. So we are watching this in the correct order. Written by JMS and directed by Janet Greek, this episode was released, as I said, on November the 8th, 1998, and takes place from June the 8th to June the 13th, 2263. And our guest stars, Ian McShane as Robert Bryson, PhD. Ian McShane.
McShane!
Yes.
Lovejoy. He used to be in a TV series called Lovejoy over here about an antiques dealer. Come detective sort of thing. He also is now in the John Wick series.
Yes,
he is.
Amongst other things.
Fantastic in American Gods as well.
Yes.
And was he the actor in that horrible episode from the first season with the robot monster?
No.
Or was that a different guy that looked like him?
That's a different one. That's...
I don't remember who that was.
Ilya Kuryakin, wasn't it?
Oh, David McCallum.
Yeah. Okay, yes, you're right.
Okay.
Most things could be made better with me and McShane. That's it.
Oh, yeah. Where are we? Martin Sheen as the Soul Hunter. Oh, my goodness. Wow. We're really hitting high. What's going on here?
That was the budget gone.
That was the budget gone. Yeah, exactly. Because they've made this into a two-parter sort of film thing and could increase the budget and put it all on two actors. Jeff Doucette as Second Man. Oh, they've managed to even get a second man in, not just man. Second Man.
Amazing, really.
Wayne Alexander as Soul One.
Yes, we know Wayne Alexander. He was... I can never remember. Lorien.
That's who he was. I was trying to look out who he was. I knew the name. I couldn't pin it. I think, I should know the name. Why do I know the name? Bob Amaral as Customer. Oh, we're into the big parts here. This you can see now why these people here, because the budget's already gone. So yeah. You can only get man, so one customer.
They have man number two. So where was man number one?
There isn't one. He's probably cut because of budget restraints. Can't afford the first one. We can only afford the second one. He's cheaper. Then I'm going to have to guess at this name. Beej Barquette as woman. So that's okay. We're in second man and woman. Then Joel Brooks as Jacob Mayhew. Well, we're a little bit down the list here, but at least he gets a speaking part. Josh Cox as Lieutenant David Corwin. TJ Hoban as male hologram. Stuart Pankin as James Riley. Oh, blimey, here's a name. Ray Proshear as Klaus. Nikki Ziering as female hologram. Jeff Silverman as man. Oh, no, here he is, man.
Oh, right.
Then a.k.a. Mr. Clute. Jean St. James as Sheila. And uncredited is Stephen Austin Skordelis as the Pac Marat, who I don't remember being there. So it must have been in the background somewhere. Anyway, guys, what did we think of this TV movie?
It wasn't very good.
It rounds off season 5 nicely then.
Yes, yes, it does. The CGI was crap.
The CGI. Well, the
walking men going down the corridor, like, oh, look, I'm going into the light.
Yeah.
That didn't convince you? That didn't do it for you?
Mr. Sheen there, he seemed like he was phoning it in and half drunk half the time and just was in a different episode or something. I don't know.
I don't think he's ever played an alien before, has he?
I don't know. And then we got to see Dr. Franklin for about 14 seconds. That was his best role yet, actually, in the entire series.
And it wasn't playing himself.
That's right.
Oh, dear.
What did you guys think?
Dan, over to you.
It's true. He played this creepy messenger, like, oh, a billion souls are going to destroy you all. And that's less creepy than Dr. Franklin. It's crazy. Ian McShane. Absolutely love him. Ian McShane. Anytime he appears on screen, my wife and I have a thing where we have to scream McShane. No reason. We just do it all the time. So that's always good. But he was completely underused. Like, they had him
wasted
the first 20 minutes, and then he just didn't do anything. He just sits there in the ball of light for the ending, and then they shoot at him, and he passes out. And they just talk about what happened to him afterwards without actually talking to him as a character. There we go. Martin Sheen. Oh, my God. I think three different characters, the way he was playing it. When he first appeared, he had this kind of like bug-eyed alien. Oh, what are these strange humans? And he was kind of doing this glide thing like Morticia Adams from the Adams Family. And then gradually he became just Martin Sheen in weird makeup with the weird, I don't know, female body part on his
body. We'll call it a jewel.
And then a butt on the back of his head as well. And then this weird bumpy forehead thing that was going on. So he was just Martin Sheen in makeup. And then the last performance he gave was kind of like a weird fusion of the two. He was kind of like this child version of the Soul Catchers, who was kind of, my naive ways, I will save the day. It's absolutely fine. I am so grateful for you to show me the way. And he completely backtracked on his 4,000-year-old faith in one conversation with the captain of Babylon 5. Very strange. The pervy plot, stay pervy, is my note. Alan Moraine, count to four. Alan Moraine,
yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. It's the man who was running the holosuite. And we have holosuites in Babylon 5. Who knew? Oh, my God. There's just so much weird stuff in this episode. I don't know. I kind of liked it better than Third Space. If I had to compare it to the previous TV movie we had, which kind of felt really out of place and didn't really fit where it was placed in the Babylon 5 canon, this at least made sense as a really crap episode of Babylon 5 to add to season 5.
Yeah.
So it's better than Third Space, but it's still awful.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Holosuites on Babylon 5, who knew? Well, obviously not Lockley and Zach.
Right.
Or anybody else.
I'm going to hit me with a love bat, sorry.
Did you like the picture?
That was the best part of the show.
I love that. I just happened to pause it. I just happened to pause the picture as Lockley is being shown by Josh Corwin. Josh Gordon, by Corwin, who's basically saying, here's my love bat. And he's getting it out of the box, which is sort of low down on his body. And she's looking down at it. But you see, it's, you know, Corwin's got his back to the camera. So I then screenshotted that and sent it to these two guys and said, here's Corwin showing Lockley his love bat. And it just looks bizarre. Bonkers. So anyway, yes, I think you're right.
Yeah, your thoughts, Paul.
Yeah, my thoughts. I mean, without going to like spoiling the overall score that I'm going to give this, this basically, I thought it wasn't a bad episode of Babylon 5. The trouble was, it was stretched over two. And so instead of having, I mean, if this had been, you know, just one episode, 45 minutes, with both plots in it and both stories exactly the same, but without all of the stretched out bits of Lockley slowly taking her jacket off in the evening or talking about hamburgers for bloody 5 minutes, take all of those stretchy out bits and filler bits out, and it's an episode of Babylon 5. It works. It's got an A plot. It's got a B plot. They merge at the end, so they become sort of, you know, there's it merges the two rather than being two separate things. It is lacking a lot of people we would have liked to have seen in Babylon 5, like Londa Mollari, like Shakaar and all that. But we got what we get because these are the characters that we've got now and we're moving on with them. So it's a bit of a poor episode of Babylon 5. The trouble is, it's two. So, yeah, it was stretched too long and became too thin and had bits thrown in it that we wouldn't have seen if it was in one episode, the bits with Franklin. You know, the bit where she gets dragged into the orb, it doesn't add anything to it. It's sort of a little bit of backstory, but we could have got that. Well, we did sort of get that from the description that the Soul Hunter gave us, a bit of exposition there to fill in the another 5 minutes. So, yeah, it's not brilliant. It's not horrifically bad. The story made sense. It had some sort of interest. It brought back the Soul Hunters. We get to see, you know, a scary part where we've now got, you know, all these demons running around the place, you know, wreaking havoc and killing people. So yeah, it was okay. It was okay, but not good by any means. So he says, getting his throat ready for one of the longest reviews we're ever going to do. deep down in an archaeological dig, Lovejoy and somebody who sounds like Lieutenant Gruber from a lower low finds what looks like a hockey puck inscribed with an infinity sign on one side and a spiral on the other side. After it is removed from the wall where it was found, they continue to try to dig through the wall. When they do, 50,000-year-old stale air escapes, but to Dr. Robert Bryson, this is as sweet as perfume. He creates a hole big enough to look through, and what he finds is a massive chamber. And somebody has left the lights on for 50,000 years. I hate to see that electricity bill.
See, that's the discrepancy. 50,000 years, but the race has only been gone for 10,000. And our Soul Hunter Martin Sheen there knows all about the planet, but he's only been around for 4,000 years.
Well, I think 4,000 years worth of revision. I think I'd get that myself. I think I'd be able to understand a little bit about the race. But if the chamber's been there for 50,000 years, but the... Well, that's a good point. If the chamber's been there sealed for 50,000 years and this is a 4,000-year-old race, how did they get in there without opening the door? Yeah, that's a good point, that. Oh, well done.
Transporter technology, maybe?
Yeah. Very good. So that's two. Sense. So I've got two goofs that we could actually throw onto IMDb because they didn't pick this up.
Very true.
I don't think anybody was really bothered by until they finished watching it. Thought, I can't be asked.
They actually panned to the side. There's this one guy, they get sealed in. They sent him in and that was it. They just sealed him up and that was it. No more.
They dig into the chamber and make their way in. The walls are dotted with lights that could be souls. What Dr. Bryson is after is immortality, and he hopes to find it by using these souls. Suddenly another ship arrives, and Klaus gets nervous and orders everybody back to the ship, but Bryson doesn't want to go so soon. He spots an orb that is flashing and takes it with him back to the ship. On his way back, he sees his crew running across the valley floor, and they are shot and killed by the other ship. Bryson hides as the orb glows, to which he says,
No, don't worry.
We'll find a way. I'll never let you go. Never.
Meanwhile, on Babylon 5, Captain Lockley is taking a stroll through the arcades and smelling the roses when Lieutenant Corwin catches up with her. It's been almost 3 days since there has been any kind of crisis. She says it's been good since Sheridan has left, as he was a lightning rod for all sorts of problems. But even so, she still misses him and Garibaldi, even though their presence always spelt trouble. Lieutenant Corwin takes this opportunity to tell Lockley that Mr. Garibaldi has just arrived on the station, just as a fight breaks out in front of them. She says suddenly she seems to have a headache. One of the patrons at the table leaves the arcade and makes his way down below. He enters a rather sleazy-looking club. He speaks to the manager and shows him a photograph, to which the manager says, "I'm an artist, and the patron should be pleased with his work." Then he flicks a switch and instantly a female hologram appears. The manager offers him a haptic suit and offers to show him how to use it, but the patron says he can figure it out as he follows the hologram into a back room. Suddenly, there is a loud scream, and the manager goes to see what has happened to the patron, complaining that if he has broken the suit, he'll have to pay for it. Garibaldi is meeting with Lockley in her office. Garibaldi has been trying to track down all the black projects that Edgar Industries had been working on in the past. He's looking for a researcher that has been off the grid for a while and is due to meet with him here on Babylon 5. In fact, he is due to meet him here in Lockley's office right now. She's not too happy about it, but she agrees to hold the meeting in her office. Right on time, Dr. Bryson appears. Dr. Bryson is obviously taken by Lockley, and even more so when she appears to know a little about his subject, of archaeology and cultural anthropology. After a while of idle chit-chat, Garibaldi suggests they continue the meeting elsewhere. As they leave, Lockley says, "Have you found anything interesting recently?" To which Bryson says, "Yes, most definitely." In his quarters, the orb glows. The meeting continues at the restaurant, where Bryson says he was sorry to hear about the passing of Edgar's and says he was a visionary. Garibaldi disagrees.
"He was a nut, and he was a control freak."
"Well, these days, only a nut and a control freak would completely fund research into pure science."
"He didn't do it because he was trying to advance science or serve the Commonwealth. He wanted to own everything that wasn't nailed down or on fire. He wanted to invent anything he couldn't buy and buy anything he couldn't invent."
"Perhaps. But he was willing to fund my program, and for that alone, I will always consider him a good man."
Garibaldi wants to know what Bryson is up to, so he knows whether to continue to fund it.
"The ledgers didn't say?"
"No, they only had the initials L.E. next to the dollar amounts."
"Oh, I see. I suppose L.E. could be shorthand for life extension, but knowing Mr. Eggers, I think it was a reference to my pet name for the project, Life Eternal, Immortality. I'm engaged in nothing less than the search for eternal life, Mr. Garibaldi."
Of course it means immortality.
"Can you think of a worthier cause than immortality, Mr. Garibaldi?"
Garibaldi's continuing support would depend on three things. One, does it really exist? Two, how much will it cost? And three, who gets to use it? Will it just be for the rich folk?
"That was the general idea. Mr. Edgars saw considerable profit in finding the answer to the question of life eternal."
Garibaldi says to Bryson that he's been at it now for 3 years, and is he any closer to finishing it?
I think I am, Mr. Garibaldi. I found something recently that, well, for the last 20 years of my life I've been searching for. This discovery could unlock the answer to eternal life."
"And what's that?"
"Oh, well, I don't want to say it just yet. I want to make sure it is what it is and that I fully understand how it works."
"Dr. Bryson, I have come a long way."
"So have I, Mr. Garibaldi. I just need a few more days to finish my preliminary analysis, and then I'll tell you everything."
"No. I'd like to say that I can wait for the whole thing, but I can't. Now, you may have found something new, and I can understand that you want to take the time and investigate, but that doesn't cover the data that you've been gathering for the last 3 years. You can at least give me that information so I'm in a better position to evaluate this new finding of yours."
"Mr. Garibaldi..."
"Nope. No, that's the condition. Or I'm back on Mars and your funding stops effective immediately."
Garibaldi says he doesn't have the time to wait for the results and will come by Bryson's quarters in the morning to see what the results are. Bryson reluctantly agrees. Meanwhile, back in the B-plot, Lieutenant Corwin brings Mr. Clue to the patron from the Sleazy Hollow Whorehouse to Captain Lockley. There is a problem in down below that she needs to be aware of. Mr. Clute says that the hollow brothel on Brown 11 is dangerous, and he was nearly electrocuted. The owner of the brothel had said his business was sanctioned by Babylon 5, which of course is not true. Lockley says that she will take down the details and send Zach Allen to investigate. When Mr. Clute is gone, Lieutenant Corwin says he has something that will relieve headaches and stress. It's a love bat, which looks a lot like a short-handled baseball bat. He shows her how to use it. He proceeds to hit himself with the bat.
Here, works like this.
I love you. I forgive you. I love you. I forgive you.
See? It physically releases the need for punishment and guilt when we do something wrong, and at the same time, supplies positive, verbal, psychological reinforcement. It helps boost confidence and self-esteem.
Well, thank you. I'm sure it'll come in very handy.
Not a problem.
She hits a couple of pieces of furniture with it and chuckles to herself. In his quarters, Dr. Bryson is trying to activate the orb. He manages to activate a device that allows him to see inside the orb.
Yes,
Dan's just got his love bat out.
Got my love
that's
bat.
Another story from another time.
You're useless. You just give up. Forget about it. Oh, no, it's my apathy bat. Sorry, that's a completely different one.
I suppose you have to have one of those if you live in Chatham.
Off the course.
He manages to activate a device that allows him to see inside the orb. It looks like he can see one of the souls, but they can't hear him. But at least he has made contact. Zach Allen pays a visit to the hollow brothel. As he enters, a lot of the patrons try to hide themselves. He asks to see the manager, who promptly turns up and asks him what he can do for him. Zach says he can pack all of his stuff up and get on the first transporter out of here. They argue over whether his entertainment permit, which lasts for 6 months, covers this sort of entertainment. The manager puts forward his reasons for staying and shows Zach how the haptic suit works. After a vigorous and compelling argument, he tells Zach that he is not going anywhere. Zach says once his patrons find out that his equipment is faulty and dangerous and they could be electrocuted, he may have to leave anyway.
Hey, you want to try it for yourself? Come on, I'll give it to you for free. Or on the other hand, if you're here for a fight, I can get into that too. You think you can just come in here and intimidate me into leaving? Think again. You want me out of here? Take your best shot. I'll see you in court.
You got it. Meanwhile, I suggest you tell these other folks here about how this equipment of yours is faulty and dangerous. What? Hell, I'm surprised somebody hasn't been electrocuted by now. I'll be back later with those papers.
What was that about being dangerous? I'm getting my money back.
Get Riley on the line.
Bryson is dictating some more notes on his experiment on the orb.
Can you hear me? Who are you? What's your name?
Name.
What's your name?
Name. God.
What's wrong?
They came for us. They took us away. They had no right.
The soul says, "You don't understand. Leave us alone. Leave us alone." And returns to the orb.
Let me go back to sleep. Let me die.
Then you're not dead. Not a recording, you're a living mind preserved at the moment of death.
You don't understand. Leave us alone.
Don't understand what?
Leave us alone!
Oh. As Bryson writes down some more notes, the orb rolls towards his equipment, connecting itself, and some of the energy exits the orb. In the meanwhile, Zach Allen is patrolling the corridors of Babylon 5 when he hears crying. It's coming from a lady in a black cloak sitting on the stairs. She is asking, where are her children? But when Zach shines his torch on her, it is obvious that she is transparent. She then turns into energy and flies towards Zach, going straight through him and off down the corridor. Captain Lockley is eating her breakfast at the restaurant when she is approached by a man in a suit with a wallet full of documents. He introduces himself as the attorney for Jacob Mayhew, the hollow brothel owner in Brown 11. He serves a restraining order, an official service of papers and a subpoena, and Lockley and Babylon 5 are now being sued by New Wave Hollow Systems for restraint of trade, harassment, infringements of his rights of speech, and slander based on Zach Allen's comments.
That actor played a lawyer so well. Like, you know, like a great level of smarminess and confidence and just kind of gross creepiness.
And confidence, not arrogance as well. It was confident that he knew he could win this because he's got the backing of his company. He's done this before. Yeah, here we go. They're just a small two-bit operation. We can sue them. For, you know, this is not a problem. Well, that's what he thinks. As agreed, Garibaldi pops by Bryson's quarters to see what notes he has on the orb. The place is a mess. Garibaldi wants the notes on the orb, and Bryson hands them over and then goes off on one.
Tough night?
I was working late.
Hmm. Find anything interesting?
Interesting? You've no idea at all.
Well, maybe that's because you haven't given me the information I asked you for. Your notes on your work to date?
My notes?
Yes, your notes.
Oh, yes, 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 my... my notes, yeah.
Good God, we're only a third of the way through the episode.
Yes, I burned them. It doesn't matter anymore. None of it matters. It's become irrelevant. I mean, I've seen past, beyond, over the edge to what is known. Who are you?
Excuse me?
Who are you really? Are you what I see or what's inside? If I take away your memories, the sum and substance of all that you have seen, done, known, are you still you anymore? And by taking these things away, do I now own you?
Yeah, Garibaldi says he knows he's been under a great strain recently.
Dr. Bryson, I want you to listen to me very carefully. I know you've been under a great strain lately. You've been chasing after this dream of yours for a long time, and I think...
What you think is immaterial. It's all immaterial. At least all the parts that matter. And keep your money! I don't need it anymore. I have everything that I need. I just have to go deeper. Look more deeply, listen to them more closely.
Listen to who?
That's none of your business. Now get out.
Look, Dr.
I said get out!
Zach Allen can't believe that Jacob Mayhew is going to sue them. Lockley suggests they should just drop it and let it go, but they need to find a more discreet way of dealing with it. Mayhew is not being discreet and even tried to use a hologram to spook Zach Allen. Lockley says it's not possible to generate enough energy to project a hologram over that sort of distance. Garibaldi comes in and says that his work is done here and he is leaving the station. Just then, something comes through the jump gate. At the same time, in Bryson's quarters, the orb starts to glow very brightly. As the ship approaches the station, Garibaldi recognizes it. It's a Soul Hunter ship, and they only seem to appear when somebody is about to die. Which on Babylon 5 is a pretty low bar.
But when the Soul Hunters, they turn up, last time they did that, everyone was trying to desperately get off the station. Like, everyone was kind of chill about it this time around. No one bothered to try and, you know, charter any transports to get out of there. So, it's the Soul Hunters. We didn't like them last time. It's fine.
Yeah, it was a bit... Well, a lot of them hadn't seen these ships before. And until Garibaldi says, you know, check the records, you know, I've seen this before. But surely a good captain who comes on board would check a few records to see what's been happening over the last few years, just to get up to speed with anything that's gone wrong, maybe.
Yeah, it's just a basic.
Yeah. They greet the ship and its captain. The Soul Hunter says that he is here for something that has been taken from them. The name of the person who stole it is Bryson. Garibaldi asks, what did he take? And the soul hunter says, it's more than you could possibly know, and explains all about what the soul hunters do.
We capture those rare souls, the poets and philosophers, the artists, the leaders. We collect them all. And what was taken from us, what is ours, we're among the rarest of the rare. Thousands of years ago, Rauga was a distant world whose name had been forgotten by all but our order. They were an advanced people who chose not to leave their planet and go beyond the stars.
He describes their home planet.
A race wise beyond their time and soon to die before their time. We knew it. We felt it. We are drawn by the smell of death. The passing of the physical form is like a beacon to us. And we came at once because we could feel the passing of a billion minds.
All that matters is that it happens.
We did not know the cause. If it was a disease or the result of war or some planetary disaster, it did not matter. All that matters is that it happens. And we decided that we would save them all. An entire world of souls claimed at the instant of death. A magnificent achievement. Only three times in our history have we done such a thing.
They were certain that no one else was aware of their location. Alas, they were wrong.
Then it was decided to place the Rauga vessel of souls in one of our whisper galleries, where they would never be alone, where they might talk to each other there in the great gallery. We were certain that no one else was aware of the location. Alas, we were wrong.
Garibaldi says he doesn't believe in souls. Lockley says it doesn't matter what he believes. What was stolen should be returned. Zack asks if these people were consulted to have their souls locked up forever. The soul hunter says it is either that or death. A message comes through that Dr. Bryson has left his quarters. The soul hunter says they must have the orb back, as only they can deal with it safely. What they could do if they escaped isn't worth thinking about. But Lockley asks a question anyway. She says, what would they do if they escaped and were after revenge? The soul hunter says if the souls escaped, they would look for a vessel to enter, and with the power of a billion souls, they could do pretty much anything they wanted. Bryson has found a hiding place and is talking to the orb. He says, yes, I understand. I won't let them take you. Better to destroy the station, embrace the darkness, than go back there. Lockley is briefing a search party about Dr. Bryson's last known movements, when the lawyer Riley turns up to see if she has had a chance to consider her response to his suit. I thought it was a nice suit, myself. It's a nice little black number with white shirts. No tie, though. Yeah. That was a disgrace, but... She says she does not have time for this, and to go and chase an ambulance somewhere while she deals with the situation in hand. Riley was hoping they could work this out amicably, but he is happy to take this to court and leaves. Meanwhile, Bryson fires up the orb and releases its power. Down in the hollow brothel, a patron in the haptic suit is looking at his female creation. Just then, her eyes flash, and another hollow person, a male, turns up and starts kissing her. The patron leaves disappointed. When he does, the two hollow images turn into two of the souls from the orb. The patron tries to complain to the manager, who's too busy to speak to him. While he is waiting, another patron walks in with a hollow image of Lockley. So the first patron asks if he can have one of those as well.
I'll take one too.
Are we supposed to think that that's Colwyn? Like, I couldn't work out, like, from the height of the person, like, are we supposed to think that's a character we already know who was? Because he gave her the love bat, so I'm just kind of feeling like, is that a whole bit of the episode they cut out?
Would that have been too creepy, or would that have been a thing that goes forward?
Oh, I didn't think it looked like him, but
it didn't. It wasn't him, though. But it was an intrigue, because I'd looked at it twice to see whether it was somebody that we knew. And it would have been interesting if it was Colwyn, but I think it's probably a bit too obvious, maybe. But yeah, and it made
just it. I
think it would damage his character, because he's basically just a nice, innocent kid. Who probably would have, he suggested the love bat about for getting rid of headaches and things. That's his way in. You know, that's his sort of, naive little sort of, you know, nice person way in, rather than just going, hey, Dahl, do you want to go out with me? He's trying to work his way in that way. You know, so...
He also thought he had a date with Ivanova, too.
Oh, at one point, true. Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yes. But, yeah, you know. Yeah, if it had been him going into the holosuite with Holly...
It would have cheapened him. Absolutely. Yes,
yeah, yeah. I think his character would have suffered for that. So I'm glad it wasn't him. Having said that, the guy who did do that was... Whew, yeah. Thank you for letting us see that. The Soul Hunter has broken into Lockley's quarters, which he is not too happy about, but they're told to go wherever the spirit moves. Drinking out of a cup with a 1970s curly plastic straw and eating a burger, she asks why the Soul Hunter came here if he doesn't want to talk. She asks what do they do once they have the souls locked in the halls. The Soul Hunter says they allow them to continue, to talk to each other, to preserve them. He says flesh has desires and needs, but the soul is pure. Lockley says it's not so much the being, it's the doing. Being unable to touch or be touched in return would not be right. Just then, all the lights go out. Lockley manages to put some emergency lights on, and the Soul Hunter tells her to get behind him. The bulkhead starts to bulge, and when Lockley asks what it is, the Soul Hunter says it's rage unleashed. Things start to explode. Other energy bolts dance around the room, as it is after the Soul Hunter. He tells Lockley to leave, and as she tries to, she sees the energy bolt come towards the Soul Hunter. She dives in front of it and saves him, but takes the full blast of the bolt. Lockley is rushed to Medlab, very slowly, in a slow-motion montage. I thought, rush her to, quick, get her to Medlab, get her to rush her, and it's a slow-motion. I talk about stretching the episode out by slowing down some of the film. God, dear, oh dear, and where's Franklin? He's not even there. She has an out-of-body experience and watches herself die, and her soul is placed in the orb. Okay, so the story was doing okay until this point, and then starts getting a little bit silly. She is now on the planet, on a coastline. Suddenly, Dr. Franklin appears. Oh, here he is. He's in the orb. No wonder he couldn't get out to Medlab. He proceeds to tell her about what this place used to be. Of course, it's not Stephen. It's just a way to get Franklin into the story. He is actually one of the alien souls in the orb. Although they did have a way of getting him into the story by actually being in Medlab when Lockley turned up. Is it bedtime again?
It is bedtime.
I have to cut this one short.
Except Franklin's back on Earth doing his biological research or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. Ah, that's true. Yes. Yeah. Well, where's the other doctor then? Where's the promoted doctor, Dr. Hobbs or whatever her name was?
Yeah, Dr. Hobbs. Yeah. They couldn't afford her. They had Martin Sheen instead.
Oh, of course. That's right. And man as well.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And he was playing two roles. Whatever. Yeah. Mr. Clute and man. God, hogging it. Get the twofer. Anyway.
At least they didn't try and get Ladder in it. That's the main thing.
He might have been there. He might have just been like in the background.
During the background. Yeah.
Beautiful, isn't it? It's exactly as I remember it. The reality now is quite different, I imagine. The towers long since gone to dust. The cities fallen, destroyed. But here, in our thoughts, it remains. Because we remember it, it is.
Stephen?
No.
There are mad ones and good ones.
What happened? I was...
You were caught in the middle of a power struggle, literally as well as figuratively. The mad ones saw an opportunity to take their revenge on one of our captors. Now, we tried to interfere, but they got ahead of us. When you jumped in front of the other, we were able to adjust the power in the nanoseconds between the time it left the wall and struck you. Just enough time to stop your heart for a second so that we could talk.
This is what the mad ones say.
You said that the mad ones...
Yes. Result of 10,000 years of captivity over there. That is where they stay. More go there every year. In time, that will be all there is. And we will all be lost.
I don't understand. If you have this much control over the outside, why not just have Bryson or someone else destroy the globe that keeps you prisoner? It seems even death would have to be better than this.
That is what the mad ones say. That is why we have to stop them.
They will destroy themselves, you, and anyone who gets in their way to take their revenge on what has been done to us.
Suddenly, Lockley's vital signs start to return, and she comes back to life.
I was told your people were dying anyway.
No. No, we weren't. That is the point. They made a mistake. Look, we do not have much time. Now, you have to make them understand. Now, we were not dying. You have to tell them. Tell them they made a mistake. We were not dying. We were evolving. We were evolving.
Lieutenant Corwin is called to the CNC as thousands of Soul Hunter ships arrive at Babylon 5. They take up firing positions all around the station, which is put on battle stations. The Soul Hunter visits Lockley, who has made a partial recovery, to show her his thanks for saving his life by giving her a single flower. That's poor. She asks what happened. I mean, even Corwin gave her a love bat, for goodness sake.
It's true. Yeah.
She asks what happens to Soul Hunters when they die. He says they are not offered immortality. He tells her that more of his kind have arrived, and if the soul vessel is not found soon, they will attend to it themselves. They have the ability to attach their ships to another ship and burn their way through the hull to gain entry. Soul Hunter says he will talk to his colleagues and try to explain that he will find the orb, or soul vessel, by himself. Lockley tells him about her vision that she had, and the Soul Hunter says that cannot be. So she describes the planet. He still says it's not possible, at least not yet. She says these are not ordinary souls and have evolved past a certain point and have become beings of energy. Just as they got to that point, the Soul Hunters put them into the orb and trapped them in glass for 10,000 years. It's 10,000 years now. Trapped when they should have been exploring the universe. The Soul Hunter is contrite and asks Lockley what they must do to make amends. She says, talk to your people and try to give them more time and keep them away from the station, as there are too many souls crying out for revenge, and the last thing they need to do is show them more targets. The Soul Hunter agrees. Lockley makes her own way to Brown 11, where Garibaldi and Zach Allen find the person who was killed by death. Just then, the manager of the Hollow Brothel turns up complaining about the scare tactics, which are being used to close down his brothel. When they point out that this is not scare tactics, he shows them an energy beam that is travelling past his brothel. As they watch the energy beam, the hollow image of Lockley appears. Garibaldi finds it intriguing, but Zack does not, and when Garibaldi says he can understand why a lot of men would like to see this, the hollow brothel manager says it's mostly women who use it.
Interesting.
Ahead of its time. Just then, Captain Lockley turns up and is not happy at what she sees. Zack says normally the hollow images cannot exit the hollow brothel, but they must be using so much energy they have managed to do so. Just then, a lot of souls walk past, and when they follow them, they find the hollow version of Lockley addressing them in one of the docking bays.
For 10,000 years, we have been prisoners. For 10,000 years, we have had one need, one ambition, one dream. To strike back at those who imprisoned us. Though we will enter the great dark with them, the sacrifice is a worthy one. To end our suffering and our pain, to end it all. We are on the path. Now all we have to do is wait here and let our vengeance come to us.
The lights in the docking bay dim went, which Zack thought was the excess drain of the holograms, but as the hollow images didn't dim, they must be being controlled independently. Lockley says that they were distracting them, as there is nothing in the holograms, so she grabs a thermal grenade and throws it into the holosuite. Once it's destroyed, she explains that the souls are going to blow up the reactor of Babylon 5. This will destroy all of the Soul Hunters and their ships. She finds the Soul Hunter, and although he has spoken to the ships, unfortunately they have refused to believe him. At 4,000 years old, their kind believe him to be quite young and naive. So if the Soul Vessel has not been found by the end of the episode, in 20 minutes, they will attack. Incredibly, they find Dr. Bryson in the next scene, which was, like, so quick. He was hiding 1 minute ago, then they just walk up to him. He is surrounded by energy from the souls and is sat on a podium with the vessel hovering above his open hands. Security surround him, Garibaldi volunteers to have a word with him first to appeal to his humanity. He knows he is inside there somewhere. He knows he doesn't want this to really happen. The Souls take over Bryson and attack. Security shoots back. But there is an impasse. In this scene, I don't know whether you guys noticed it, in the background, as all this is going on and we're talking, Garibaldi's talking to the Soul Hunter and they're in the foreground. In the background, you can see Bryson sat on the podium with the orb in his hands with no energy beam around him. Now, I kept an eye on this because I thought, ow, have they just not put in the CGI? Or has it stopped and they haven't noticed? The Soul Hunter says they are powerful enough to draw Lockley into their vessel, which proves they are highly advanced. He speaks to Bryson, telling the Souls and the vessel that he will convince his fellow Soul Hunters to release them and offers himself to be taken into the vessel. At this point, he has an energy beam around him. So yes, they forgot to add the CGI in the background.
Oopsie. Oops.
Two goofs. His body will become a doorway to hope. They take his soul into the vessel and the energy beam disappears, releasing Dr. Bryson. The Soul Hunter is dead, and Dr. Bryson is taken to MedLab. Now, if this had been a true film, it would have had a bigger, better ending than this. This is definitely an end of episode ending to a show. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit, I know it's a TV movie, but even so, it could have done a bit better with the ending. A Soul Hunter from the ships outside the station comes to take the orb back. Lockley says, make sure that the souls in the vessel are released, otherwise the Soul Hunters will become the hunted. She hands over the orb and the Soul Hunters leave. Soul Hunter ships leave. Lockley and Garibaldi are talking in their office. Garibaldi is about to leave the station, looking for more hidden black projects. Bryson is a little disorientated, but he still wants to get out and dig. As Garibaldi leaves, Mr. Riley, the lawyer, arrives.
Captain Lockley.
Ah, Mr. Riley. So good to see you. I was beginning to miss our little talks.
Oh, gosh, me too. However, my client has informed me that in light of recent events involving your wanton acts of destruction, we are now prepared to bring not only civil, but also criminal charges against you.
For what?
For what? You blew up the man's business.
Oh, that. Well, Mr. Riley, in that case, I suggest you revisit his lease.
Did he read the lease? Of course.
Well, then, you must have missed Section 7, Clause 4, which states quite clearly that Babylon 5 and myself are not liable for damages resulting from military action.
Oh, that was completely unjustified!
I have a couple of dozen security personnel engaged in combat who would disagree with you. In fact, already have.
What's this?
Depositions by all those involved, supporting my use of force and the nature of the combat. Further, since all prior charges were centered around the condition of the entertainment center and the ability of said business to operate freely...
With no premises, there can be no suit.
The unfortunate destruction of your client's office makes this discussion rather moot.
Oh, just a minute.
Now, I'm sure you could choose to contest this, but then we'd get into the illegal use of my image by your client's hollow brothel, which would require a countersuit, and I doubt very much you'd win that one, Counselor.
Captain, you really expect me to go back to my client with nothing?
Absolutely not. Here. You can have this.
And with a few modifications, of course.
I find it very useful in times of great stress. Go ahead. It was a gift to me from a friend, so now I'm giving it to you. With a few minor modifications.
I'm an idiot. I'm a loser. No one likes me. My mommy dresses me funny.
What the hell was that end credit music?
It's the jazzy music, like, hey ho, it's just another fun adventure at Babylon 5.
I've not had any of this before. Jazz at the end of the episode. I mean, I'll enter it here, but it's a bit weird.
But you know what's not a bit weird? This promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
I throw them up in the air, and Sean hits them out the park with his love bat.
That's right. I love you. You're amazing.
Yeah. You're a disgrace.
You can do anything.
Drew Leiter here, inviting you to join Cletus Jacobs and I every week as we dive deeper into the dawn of DC. We review DC Comics, television, movies, and more. We're excited to finish the final season of Doom Patrol, return to Sweet Tooth for its second season, and check out the Netflix series Bodies. Get all your DC news on the Earth Station DCU podcast, part of the ESO Network.
Okay, I'm moving on to the trivia. Martin Sheen was originally offered the role of Dr. Bryson, but after reading the script, he asked to play the Soul Hunter instead. Now, as any good actor would do, they want to play the sort of bad guy. So, yeah, I can see that. But I don't think it was for him.
No, it wasn't.
And said he didn't get the voice right.
This was all sort of 1950s alien B-movie voice that he started doing, and the starey, bug-eyed look that he was starting with, and it just gradually just became Martin Sheen in makeup. It wasn't consistent at all.
That's right. And in fact, you're saying about the makeup, the Soul Hunter makeup, first seen in Soul Hunter 1994, in the first season, second season, was altered to make Martin Sheen's face more recognisable.
That makes sense.
I bet he
regretted that. You paid the money.
Yeah, exactly. This is the interesting bit. Because basically, if the Soul Hunter has been taken by Martin Sheen, then obviously Dr. Bryson, maybe they swapped the roles, I don't know. But in a 2004 interview with The Independent, Ian McShane stated that he wished that he had turned down the role of Dr. Bryson, as he had struggled with the technical dialogue and found looking at Martin Sheen, who was wearing an eye in the middle of his forehead, to be the most embarrassing experience that he had ever had whilst acting. He also added that during filming, he began making up his own techno babble, which displeased the producers. I can't think of any techno babble that he said. But anyway.
Me neither, but I'm sure there must have been something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to think of like all the life extension stuff he was talking about with Garibaldi, but that's not technobabble. That was just waffle. Man. It's just really lots of long words.
Yeah, he was a description of what he does. He's knocking out. I don't know. I think it's a bit of a weird one because Ian McShane's a good enough actor that he could have seen past a lot of that. And he didn't do a bad job either. He was a good enough actor in there.
Yeah. I can understand if he had like feelings that his character had just been written off. Like the first half of the movie, if that was the first episode of a two-parter, he was all there, and then he was just forgotten by the second half. So I could kind of understand if sour grapes of an actor. Oh, I was kind of given over because they had Martin Sheen. They had the bigger actor, so they just gave him all the time.
Yeah.
But I don't know, just the technobabble side, that seems a bit of a cop-out.
Yeah. This is Nikki Ziering's debut, apparently.
Him?
Yeah, she was the one that
he was the female hologram in the bikini.
Oh, yeah, well, wow, what a debut.
Admittedly, I kind of found that scene funny. I had this like, it's like, oh, I didn't pay for another person, like, oh, I'm all up for you two, but you know, can I join in? And then they just ignore him. I just thought that was quite funny.
Yeah. I sure hope they wash those encounter suits after.
Yes, funky, sticky,
yes. So anyway, moving on quickly, Sean, are there any Star Trek connections?
Yeah, we got a couple. Ray Prosha or whatever, as Klaus, he was in Voyager as a Vidian commander in the episode Deadlock. But the star of the show, of course, is Joel Brooks, who played Jacob Mayhew, and he was in Deep Space Nine's most famous episode as Fallow in the episode Move Along Home.
So Fallow, which was he the character who had the?
Yeah, he was
game?
The main guy.
So basically, he was in the shirts. So he was basically a hologram manager.
Yeah, pretty much.
Proprietor, which is basically what he was playing here.
Typecast.
I wonder which way around was it? Who got that first? And whether they said, hey, we know somebody who's good at pretending to be a hologram manager?
Ella Moraine.
I thought that was actually a decent episode. I know a lot of people write that off. But as it's season
one...
There
are worse episodes.
Yeah, as it's season one, and it is sort of harking a little bit back to original Star Trek with that sort of idea, I thought it was okay. You have to play the game rods and move past it.
Oh, yeah, it's very original series.
Yeah. So I didn't think it was a bad one.
I love Ella Marie. I want it as a ringtone. I just haven't made it yet.
Yeah, okay. So, anyway, moving on to our ratings. We rate every episode, and this is obviously a movie, so we'll call it an episode, out of 5 jump gates. And IMDb, they rate their episodes out of 10. They have given this a 6.5.
That's about right.
That is low.
I think that's a little bit high, actually.
IMDb, let's put that in. What did I say? 6.5. Oh, it's in the bottom 10. So, yeah, not very good. So that actually works out as 3.25 in our language. Sean, did you give this anything at all?
I didn't write anything down, but I'm not giving it a 3.25. That's too good of a score. like we said, the acting was hokey. The CGI was horrible. It was a consistent story, but there was some goofs and gaffes and that kind of stuff. You know what? 2.5, just because. At least we got some more Babylon 5 after the series was over. But it's so mediocre and right down the middle that it's just not good.
So, 2.5 is right in the middle of our 5-star ratings. But your average over the season has been 3.6. So, yes, consistently you're saying it's of a low average episode.
It certainly is.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And it's also in your bottom 10 of all
episodes. And I was watching it with, and Leah was beside me playing on her phone, and she kept peeking at it every once in a while. And she's like, why are you guys watching this garbage?
Because we have to, because we're completists and we have to finish the series.
You sounded like Martin Sheen then. Because we're completists, we have to finish the series.
We need
all of the souls.
I am a soul hunter.
We need all the souls, not just some. We need to complete all of the souls. Okay, Dan, over to you.
I wrote down the alternative title to this episode should be Love, Bats and Holograms, because River of Souls made absolutely no sense whatsoever. There wasn't a river. There were souls, but there was no river. Well, other than that brief little bit where we saw the yellow men just walking past. Yeah,
absolutely.
And that's it. That was the River of Souls. That's what we based the entire episode around, was the really bad CGI. I really don't know how I feel about this, because I enjoyed it more than Third Space. It as you were saying, Paul, it's a decent episode of Babylon 5. At least we get some characters we know. It's kind of set in the universe. We haven't just made up some random species for one thing and then we're never going to see them again. At least we've seen the Soul Hunters. We're familiar with this. We've got two huge stars in this episode. You know, so it kind of should get something more, but it's all wasted. So it kind of lets itself down. But I don't know. I clearly enjoyed it more than Third Space, so I can't give it less than Third Space.
Now, Third Space,
I gave 3.2. I can't give it any more than 3.2 because it's just an awful episode.
I think you should revisit your rating for Third Space.
I think you're wrong. I think Third Space, you gave it a 2.
Did I give it a 2?
Yeah, that's what I got down.
Oh. If you gave it a 2 on Third Space, then let's give it a 2.1. Because I enjoyed it a little bit more because it's got Martin Sheen and it's got McShane. I couldn't give it any more than that because it's a wasted episode. It's got some really intriguing ideas. We've got holograms for the first time ever. You know, no one's ever talked about having holograms. They did something interesting and then just failed to deliver.
Missed opportunity.
I would rather hit myself with a love bat than do anything than watch this episode ever again. So 2.1. Let's go 2.1.
That's hilarious, because if you put a 2 in, it puts it into your bottom 10. But a 2.1 just drags it above the bottom 10. So it must be
I'll go for that. Gropos and TKO are safe down the bottom again.
Yeah. But you will be the only person who doesn't have it in its bottom 10, because mine is definitely going into the bottom 10. I thought of a score and then thought, no, have I got that right or have I got that wrong? I thought, no, that would actually make it equal worst episode ever. And it's not that.
Mm.
However, the score I'm going to give it is actually going to put it into my bottom 10. it's a good... Okay, so let's take it all as one big episode, right? So it's got some good points. It's got some bad points. It's got an A plot. It's got a B plot. The story works. It's intriguing. We get some backstory of soul hunters, and we get some backstory of what souls, what happens to them. So all the ingredients are there. We've got Martin Sheen. We've got Ian McShane. Ian McShane did a good job. Martin Sheen, maybe not so much, but didn't really embarrass himself too much. You know, he just got away with it. I can see why he never did any sci-fi after it. All the other characters were fine because they're established characters. They know what they're doing. So it's really a sort of average episode, really, if it's all condensed into one. You know, if they condensed it down to a small episode, you know, a single episode, that would have been fine. But they spread it out over two. So I'm going to give this...
Wait for it.
Wait for it. Drum roll. What I normally do is I normally give this a number out of 10, and I let my spreadsheet divide it by two, because I can't work in 1-point things and 1.8s and 1.6s and 1.3s. I don't know what on earth that means. I can't look at it compared to the others, but if I see it as an 8 or a 7, I know where I am with that. It's a number I understand. So I'm going to give this a 3.7, but that's for two episodes, really, isn't it? It's one, but it's two. So I'm going to divide that by two, and it's a 1.85.
Oh, my.
Wow.
So
savage.
That's dropped right into my bottom 10, which is probably one of the lower parts of the bottom 10. It's not my worst, by a little way. But yes, it works okay as one episode, but if you make it two, then you've got to halve the points.
I kept watching the timer on the DVD player, waiting for it to be over.
Mm. I couldn't watch it in one sitting.
How much more of this?
I know. Yeah. I know, because the people who listen to the show don't realize when we record this, I will be talking away. And of course, I insert clips of the episode into the show. And what I do to remind myself what the clip is going to be, I will say, add clip here at 23 minutes or insert clip here at 15 minutes. One third of the way through the show, I said, add clip here at 33 minutes. And went, oh, God, we're only a third of the way through. This would normally be sort of the climax to a single episode. And we're still only a third of the way through. And then later on, it's 1 hour, add a clip at 1 hour, 10 minutes or something. Oh, God, it's been going for 1 hour. It took me 3 days to make the notes for this because I did it in like an hour sitting, and I'd only really recorded or made enough notes for 30 minutes worth of talking. So it took me 3 days to do it. And right on the last day, I was into the last minute and we were just about to get the credits. And my wife came in and said, come on, we've got to go out now. We nearly finished it. So I had to come back and do 1 minute's worth of tidying up. And so, yeah, so anyway, but there we go. That's our ratings and that's how we do them. So yeah, that's pretty much it, really. That's one down, another one to go.
Change my rating to 2.25. Yeah. Just listening to your explanations, I'm like, you know what? It's not even good as an average episode. So.
Yeah, that's right. I was going to say you had it a bit. You had it as an average episode if I take our score of 5, but it was lower than your average. It would be.
It wasn't good. It was. It took forever.
Yeah, because I mean, when we got to the Fall of Centauri Prime, you had one of the highest scores that you've given. You know, it's in your top 10.
Right.
And then suddenly, 1, 2, 3, 4 episodes later, or a film out later, we're down into the bottom 10. It's poor.
It's a very uneven ending for the series.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And that is the end of this episode. Join us next week where we will review the Babylon 5 TV movie, The Legend of the Rangers.
Surely that has to be better.
It's got to be better, isn't it?
I mean, is it going to be better?
I'm not holding out any hope for it.
I mean, it's like play your cards right, isn't it? Where they hold up a card and higher or lower than a 7, and you go,
is Legend of the Rangers the one where they're 1,000 years in the future and pretty much all of society's wiped out?
I guess we'll find out next week.
Because I remember seeing it, but I don't know if it's that one or something else.
No, I've seen a poster for it, and it's got Jakar's face on it, or is it just another Narn who they got Andres Casadas to play?
I don't know. I thought Valen made an appearance, but again, I don't know.
Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
Yeah, it's
maybe I'm thinking Lost Tales. I don't know.
Oh, it could be. But anyway, like I say, I guess we'll find out next week.
If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
Well, if you have any other problems, any other questions at all, just ask.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.